If you're craving nerdy tunes, we've got you covered. Nerdy FM is the Nerdy Show Network's nerd music podcast hosted by me, Mark with a C. We feature the best in geek rock, nerdcore, comedy, VGM, and every genre in between. The biggest artists alongside awesome up-and-comers with rare tracks, exclusive live recordings, and a massive archive to keep you rocking the nerd world over. Tune in exclusively through the Nerdy Show Network.
Calling all Nerdy Show listeners, we need your help. You voted for us in the Audioverse semifinals, and thanks to you, The Orphans, Nerdcasting the Multiverse, Dungeons and Doritos, and Liberty are all in the running for the final big vote. We can take home a whole slew of awards in audio drama excellence if you'll join us again to fight in the name of the Nerdy Show Network's awesomeness. Don't delay. The voting closes on December 9th. Head to nerdyshow.com/audioverse2017 for the list of nominations and all the info you need to get voting.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the borough of Queens, in the city of New York, this is the Epic Podcast with your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer, the Dark Lord.
Welcome back, loyal listener, to the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens. This is the Epic Podcast, episode number 56 on your scorecards. I am your host, Nelson Lugo.
I am your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
And we are back for another month of Epic Pie goodness with my dear friend, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Let me tell you something, Nelson Lugo.
Yes.
Sound amazing.
What?
I'm going to tell you why.
Why?
Because this past month for my birthday.
That's right. It was your birthday. Happy birthday.
No, don't sing that song.
Schaefer.
That's good. I got a sweet new pair of studio headphones.
Oh, you did?
I did, from my best friend.
Oh, my God. Who's that?
He's this guy.
Sure.
Yeah. And the thing that's great about that is that now you are listening to my old headphones.
Yeah.
The ones that have now been cast aside
right.
for the new hotness.
Right. I am now wearing your hand-me-downs.
If you are envious,
sure,
then I would suggest you need to fix your life and get a better best friend. Because mine's killing it.
I am actually quite jealous because these were headphones that I've been eyeing for myself for quite some time because I'm a brand new DJ, and that's what DJs do. Apparently they lust over headphones, and all of the reviews on that pair that you're wearing, which I forget the brand name off the top of my head. I think it's like an Audio Technica.
Yes.
You're
too new into this.
Yeah,
start turning into a gear nerd.
I think it's the X.
You people are
insufferable. XT. It's the XMT.
Oh my God,
50, I believe, or the 40, I believe, is the one I got you.
You have never been friends with drummers.
Why?
Because those fuckers will talk shop with you all day long,
and it'll
be a bunch of letters and numbers. I mean, anybody who's like a big gearhead,
sure.
We'll do that.
Well, I'm a brand new gearhead, so I'm still learning the lingo. I'm still getting the jargon.
Well, pace yourself. You're still charming. You're not yet insufferable. And that's a it's a sharp drop off of that porch.
Yeah, I guess it is. Well, happy birthday. I'm glad you like them. I really do.
Thanks.
I've been meaning to get that present for you for quite some time, so I was happy to do that.
Well, they're excellent, and they're way too sophisticated for your DJing needs. You need something rugged. These are delicate.
No,
and,
I know.
And they are for the long drives of editing your monthly podcast. And certainly not for having a few drinks and what and on stage.
Right. No, I picked them up and they're light and very, very
I don't know, because the headphones that I use now are beefy. Like you pick them up and there's some substance to them. There's weight to them. Mm-hmm. Yours, I'm very jealous. Like, they seem like you're wearing like clouds on your ears.
I feel like Steve Austin,
like, the $6 million man.
Exactly, and that this is just like a part of my head now.
Well, I'm very, very glad you like them.
Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
I did. Yeah. I did. I had a fantastic Thanksgiving. I normally don't spend Thanksgiving with my family for reasons that it's Thanksgiving. That's literally all I need to say about that. I love my sister a lot. I'm not a big fan of her married-in family, as it were. So I have Thanksgiving with my chosen family. I had Thanksgiving with my best friend, and he's a really, really great cook. And he made a fantastic spread this year.
Is this a Valentine's Day episode? Look at all the love.
I had a near hospital miss that I avoided thanks to Bunny Buxom. Yep. So, Bunny Buxom, if you're listening, thanks for the pills. Wink.
There was nothing coded about that. Why would you wink at the end of that? Thanks knows. For the pills means thanks for the pills.
No, she knows what I mean. She knows what I mean. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm pretty excited about this episode because you actually have an interview that's in the can that you've been holding on to for a little bit of time.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get to that. Folks, the thing is that, you know, month after month, we tell you we make these promises. We're going to come back and we're going to do some hot new magic with the Epic Podcast. And every month, some things get in the way.
Life gets in the way.
This month, I don't really feel like talking tonight. And this is the last available night to record.
Yeah.
I don't feel like talking because I have exhausted myself and made myself hoarse, screaming this entire month.
Right.
Specifically at my birthday. Just yelling at it.
No, I know.
Why would you do this to me? Year after year. And folks, just straight up, I don't want to talk.
Right.
Tonight.
Well, that's disheartening. I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, that's why we have backup material that we're
getting. Yeah.
Unless there's anything you want to talk about, Nelson.
Oh man, there's all kinds of great stuff going on.
Oh
yeah, I've got two. My DJ burgeoning skills are getting ever more better and better.
Excellent.
I landed two vintage DJ gigs this month.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
As you are now an employee of this company,
right? So I'm slowly but surely becoming like the backup DJ for the vintage scene here in New York City.
Oh, nice.
I'm really sort of kind of doubling down on that. I've got some fantastic performance opportunities coming up in the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. I'm dating again.
I know.
And I am dating a very lovely woman. And
she is wonderful.
Yeah.
I think she is charming and funny and awesome.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? You know what I really, really like the best about her?
What?
She's an adult who is sane. She is a sane, rational thinking adult who has a veritable cornucopia of emotions, and when they come up, we talk about it like two reasonable human beings, and we work stuff out in the moment.
That is excellent praise.
Yeah.
That you could not use on the only two adults in this room.
Right. No, yeah, exactly.
You don't meet that criteria.
I barely meet that criteria. And it's going so well that we're actually taking a vacation. I can't remember the last time I've ever taken a vacation ever, but we're taking a vacation to Copenhagen, Denmark.
It's amazing.
At the end of January. And I'm fucking excited because I've never been outside North America. I've never even had a passport before.
Oh, wow.
So this is going to be all new vistas for me. And I'm really, really, really excited.
You know, I entertained daydreams of a trip to Denmark few years ago.
Oh, did you?
Yes. After my mother's death, and I got some life insurance money, had these ideas. I was going to do all these things to celebrate life and see the world and not take anything for granted. And my mom had always wanted to visit Denmark because she had some Danish heritage that she was always fascinated by. And I started looking into it. I was telling my brother, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to Denmark. I'm going to do it for mom.
You never told me this.
Yeah.
This is the first time I hear about
this. I haven't told a lot of people about it because I quickly just slipped into a crushing, depressing routine.
And, no, absolutely.
And I have stayed comfortably there for 4 years. Thank you. But so I'm really psyched that you're going.
Yeah. Well, you should go.
You're supposed to say that after the trip.
No, you should go.
Oh, you should go to Denmark sometime.
No, dude, you should go to fucking Denmark. And if there's anything you want me to bring back from Denmark, please let me know.
How about a Danish?
Oh, I see what you did there.
That's where they're from.
I get it.
It's like champagne.
I get it. You don't need to mansplain the joke to me. I get it. It's okay.
It's both the name of the language.
Wow. You're just going to...
The people.
Just going to double down on...
And the pastries.
On that thing, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really excited. And
it's been 100 episodes, which we haven't even done 100, but it's been 100 episodes since you started off and I said, hey, how are things going? And you were like, fucking sunshine. You opened up your Trapper Keeper and rainbows shot out of it and you were like...
Well, I have a lot of really, really good stuff going on right now.
That's excellent. That's so good to hear.
Yeah, and that's it. Nothing else is happening.
Okay, this is what I was kind of...
No, that's it. That literally nothing else is happening. What's the next topic?
I feel like there's more going on in your life.
Not at all.
That.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And I only...
You know, this interview with the guys sounds really amazing. We should just cut to that right now.
I want to tell you two bits of information.
Okay.
One.
Right.
This has historically been... this process has been a catharsis for us to vent about things that might be on our mind. And it seems
that is
like
also true.
In our case, there's always something heavy on our minds.
Sure.
Not because we're deep, but because we're pathetic and because we're we're always under our own boots.
True.
So that one, if you want to get it out, this is a place.
Okay.
I mean, I have Facebook. I know a thing or two.
Sure.
And two, I have fixed the bleep button.
Oh, oh, wait, so you're actually putting effort into these episodes now?
Well.
Well, okay. You don't need to bleep this part out. I am now being sued for defamation. And I think, according to advice from my counsel, that is all I am legally allowed to say.
In the normal world,
where
your best friend isn't nearby with his hand on a bleep button.
Right. What I really, really want to say is that fucking asshole garbage fire of a human being fucking moron flaming turd piece of shit. No more, apparently. Shit ton of fucking idiot. Dumb, dumb, poopy head. Shit.
Are you good?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah. But again, from advice from counsel, I really can't say anything.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So folks, that's the deal this month. I don't want to talk and Lugo can't. So, I should have brought a spittoon for the apple.
What is that, a Granny Smith over there?
It sure is.
That's a mighty tasty apple. Mm. Is it tart?
It's so tart. Okay. Would you like a bite from the other side?
I would, actually. Please. I'd like a bite from the other side.
So, folks, since we are in no position to record an episode this month, we have a very special segment that I would like to air in place of new content. As you know, as I've been talking for the past couple of months, in November, my collaborative record with Shale Riley and the Double Ice Backfire, collectively known as Schaefer Riley and the Double Ice Backfire, released our long-awaited album, Hold Person. And I was planning to, you know, spend a little time talking about it this month, but again, I'm over everything.
Now, I think it was interesting. At one point, you were like promoting four things that people could consume media from you at the same time.
I made a lot of things this year.
Yeah.
Which is great because I felt like I was doing nothing with my life all year, and then everything that I was doing came out in like the same 12 days.
Yeah. It was like every other day you were posting something about, hey, I got a video game. Hey, I released a new, what is that? What do you call that? A drunk drawer. What is the,
Mixtape?
Mixtape, thank you. I released a mixtape. I'm on an album. I'm on another thing.
So I put out this record with Shale Riley and the Double Ice Backfire. And Shale Riley is also part of a super group that has been around for a number of years called the Grammar Club.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is a collective more than a proper group. But it's made up of Shale Riley, Glenn Case, Tanner Brown, Sean Stone, Ty Gwenly, and of course, the legendary nerdcore rapper, Beefy.
Beefy.
And they have resurrected their own sleeping beast, and the Grammar Club is back, and they've launched a Patreon.
Oh, good.
And they're producing new material. Well, I was supposed to do an interview with them for their Patreon.
Right.
And I did.
Oh, okay.
And then there was a problem, which I'm going to leave it to the interview to explain it. When we did finally get around to re-recording it, it was only the three of us, Ty Gwenly, Shale Riley, and me, the three members of Schaefer Riley and the Double Ice Backfire. So we recorded a completely different episode for the Patreon podcast, where we just talk about this new record, Hold Person, that we worked on for 2 years that just came out.
Awesome.
And it's I feel like it's a nice companion piece to the record, and I would like to let me of a couple weeks ago explain this record more than I would like to talk about it myself now.
Okay. That, and you know what? That's valid. You put something in the can for a rainy day, and guess what? It's pouring.
Well, great. Tell you what, I'm going to play you a track from that new record, Hold Person.
What?
By Schaefer Riley and the Double Ice Backfire.
Hit
and then
me.
We're just going to go into this three-way roundtable discussion.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Great. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment.
Machine and I departed. That's right, I got a time machine. It fits inside of my apartment. It only works for me and goes as far as 20 years back, only into the past. I don't remember when I started. My TV and remote are its controls, and there is a dirty purple couch that serves as its command chair, and all these old hi-a tapes I pump into its fuel lines. I watch them chain smoking as I travel through time.
Well, I was playing hero.
Isn't my today.
Go to the dark of time, no future.
listen to the vows I know I'll never keep. In 8 I'm blowing up, though I've nearly reached my peak. In 10, 11, 12 I laugh with pals that will be gone. In 13 cannons start the final fight had with my mom. I travel back a year and find there's nothing there to miss, cause by then I traded making memories for doing this. And nothing's been prevented. Each visit's more unpleasant. Great Scott explains the duck as I explain. I guess I get it. I live in that past, cause I'm dead in this present. Surrounded by the ghosts of my regrets, but otherwise alone. Echoes of the life inside of boxes that I call a home. Every time I exit the machine, it's all the same. Just an overflowing ashtray, a future which remains.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me give you a word of advice. It seems like a waste of time, but it's nice. Welcome to Camp Handsome. I am your Shale host, Riley. With me is Gwendolyn Ty and
yep.
Schaefer T. Darklord.
Hello.
Hello. This podcast, this episode 5... has gone through quite a lot of rigmarole, a lot of failed attempts and false starts. This is the fourth, I think, attempt to do this in a way. The first time was in October, and we kept fucking it up somehow. Something like Schaefer came. You were coming home from your tour, you fell asleep.
Yeah,
And then I fell asleep. I rescheduled, and then because I have a sleep disorder,
right?
I just fucking fell asleep on Wednesday. and then we had a great podcast last week. We recorded we finally did that interview. It was awesome. And we lost your audio. But now we're here. Camp Handsome, just me, Schaefer, and Ty, which is great because we are about to release our collaborative album, Hold Person, that took like 2+ years to complete. It was started, I guess.
Took a while.
Was it like 2 years to the day?
It was exactly 2 years to the day.
Right.
On November 13th, 2015, the day in between our birthdays, you visited New York for your birthday. And I met you at a karaoke bar.
Yep.
And we got wasted.
Very drunk.
And came up with the idea of doing a collaborative record.
Yeah.
We did. And it is now being released on November 13th, 2017, exactly 2 years later.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Beautiful thing. There are two of us, 2 years between the start and the finish of the thing. And,
Gosh, that reminds me. Let me just, if I can just.
Two birthdays. Yeah.
When are you going to post this?
Fucking as soon as possible.
Great. Well, then let me be the first to say in advance, happy birthday, Shale.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Happy birthday, Schaefer.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
What do you want for your birthday?
I want this record to come out.
Yeah. That would be great. Well, you know what? I think we can make it happen. Like, we can do it.
Oh, I think we can. I've heard it. I know that it's real now.
Let's talk about it track by track. Let's go through the track list. Read me, please, if you would, the track list order that you proposed that I very much approve of.
Okay, so the record Schaefer Riley and the Double Eyes Backfire, yeah, Hold the Person, opens with the song 10,000 Cigarettes.
Yeah. I like that song. It's that's a song I started a very long time ago. I think just after we put out Ultimate Songs from the Pit, I started working on that instrumental. Just it was the same kind of stuff I was doing. It was a little bit slower and moodier than the stuff on Ultimate Songs from the Pit was, but it was in the same vein, more or less. And it was NES, real NES music done on Family Tracker. It had the FDS chip add-on, I believe. So they're like seven channels or something. So there's a little bit more more complex instrumentation than on the actual Songs from the Pit tracks. But that is real NES. And gosh, I didn't know what to do with that song for a long time. I kept writing different melodies over and I didn't like any of them. And I kept writing different lyrics and it was all not working. And then one day I just thought,
Let me just say, I want to preface all of this discussion of this track by track description that I'm a big fan of Schaefer Riley and the Double Eyes Backfire. I'm not going to try and repeat everything I said on the episode that got lost, but
yeah, no, we're not doing any of the same questions,
but I have recommended that record to people for, 6 years now, saying and hyping it with the claim that it's a perfect record. I think that Ultimate Songs from the Pit is a perfect record in the way that Appetite for Destruction and the Black Album are perfect records. I just think it's just solid songwriting and execution beginning to end.
I praise.
Thank you so much.
It's just so good. You guys are so good. So
thanks,
obviously,
man.
Starving. Starving for this opportunity to do more than, a single guest verse with you guys. But one thing I've always enjoyed about your stuff, Shale, is that the way you write lyrics is I always feel like I understand what your song is about when I'm listening to your lyrics. And then at some point there's some tonal shift in the lyrics. And then I realize I don't really know what the song is about. And I used that as a challenge so that when you were sending me these pieces of songs, including 10,000 Cigarettes, I didn't want to ask questions. I was like, I have to write some raps to go to shoehorn into this song. I'm going to write what I think that this song is about. And I did that with really every song on this record. I didn't check with you. I just kind of was like, I think that this is what it's about.
Well, I don't know. My first inclination was to explain very directly what I'm doing. And then I was like, no, maybe I shouldn't pull the curtain back so much. But then my third inclination was to not be a jackass. So why would I not explain that?
I like that that was third.
I was like, it's like, yeah. You talked for a while, so I was. I'm sorry. No. What I do a lot is sometimes I just write thematically, but non-narratively. I'll just collect related impressions,
mm-hmm.
or just something around a single idea that isn't necessarily a story. And what's great is if you have a co-writer or something, and they can usually pick a story out of that kind of by accident, and then you would go with it, mm-hmm. that's what we did. That's kind of was our method, our process.
And I feel like it's in your body of work, you have songs that go from the general to the really, really specific in a single line. And like The Other Side of Memphis comes to mind, where I thought I had this kind of idea about what the narrative was that was going on in it, but it was still vague enough that, that the listener can paste their own experience into it, as all great pop music should be crafted. And then suddenly you're in a hookah bar with Kristen Ritchie, which is so incredibly specific.
That's me, Ricky Henry and me both wrote the lyrics to that. Ricky actually wrote the bulk of them. And that's it's more his thing. But I retooled them a lot and I workshopped it a lot. I'd say my input's like 25% of it. So yeah, that's cool to hear.
That's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I had to do that with 10,000 Cigarettes. I didn't realize until after I think I'd finished writing my material that you had said in an email to me, you'd made a kind of a passing note that it was that there was a video game reference in the song, which I didn't even realize.
That's so funny. It's Chrono Trigger, which is there's a special game over you get if you lose to the mid boss of the game, one of Lavos's forms. This means nothing to you, but for the podcast,
I'm listening.
If it's just in a special ending, if you lose. The final quote of this dramatic cutscene is, but the future refused to change, and you hear this, like, pretty frightening for the Super Nintendo sound chip's capabilities, like, alien laughter of the end boss as he eats the universe, you know? So that's a pretty good game. It's a pretty grim game over. That's a pretty specifically bad ending, you know?
But
it was one of the worst endings in video games at the time, in a pretty upbeat, bright, colorful, fun game. You know, it's kind of like a Disney movie kind of tone. And then you get some really gritty, grim stuff. That's Chrono Trigger. It's a great, one of the great games. One of the great games everybody regards as one of the greatest games ever. So I'd agree. It's a good game.
Would you consider that line a precursor to the...
Yo.
Okay.
That was perfect timing, because I want to abandon the question I was in the middle of asking.
Okay, great.
And instead I want to say I love that 10,000 Cigarettes kicks off the record. Mostly.
Yeah.
For that wailing guitar solo.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It's so good.
I love that. It is wailing. That is the correct way to describe it.
Oh, it feels it's beautiful. it suffers and it exposes itself. All right, I'm not
doing it. it really goes with the story that you created from what we did. It really goes with that the time machine motif. That's brilliant. You really took in a direction that I hadn't thought of that stuff at all, but you did get the time machine. I hadn't been thinking about that kind of that kind of time travel, as it would apply to a real world situation kind of stuff, just because I was kind of rooted in Chrono Trigger thematically.
I mean, I feel like I went a little on the nose with it. I took away this phrase, the future refused to change, and thought about this obsessive, detrimental fixation on nostalgia and how it's not going to fix anything for you. And that's where I went with it.
Yeah, and that was a great story, and I think it left a strong impression on me when I first heard it. It was really it was a bit emotional. It was really, really good, and it's so raw and real and believable and true. A lot of them, I'm sure. What's I going? Oh, jeez. Sorry, I'm getting verklempt. I'm getting all.
Let me just, I just want to say, I don't do cocaine anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. But I used to have a period. I'd have all these kind of repetitive habits and routines that I would do when I was really strung out on coke. And when I was in this really sad, depressive place where I was kind of locking myself away in my apartment for days on end and not using it like a social drug, but just sitting in my apartment and getting high by myself.
Medicating.
I would find all of these kind of repetitive activities that I would obsessively do. And one of them was going through these boxes of old videos. I have hundreds and hundreds of mini DV tapes and high 8 tapes and VHS tapes of stuff that I shot over the years and never watched. And I would just I would think of some moment that I remembered shooting and I would want to find it. Not that I was going to do anything with it, but I just wanted to find it. And I would just sit in my apartment like this sad, drugged out monster and just sit and hunt through these tapes and think about the old days. And it wasn't until therapy when I started reflecting on weeks and weeks of that behavior that I realized how just crushingly sad and pathetic that was.
I found that song painfully relatable. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I think you conveyed very, very clearly what you made explicit just now. It really, the song conveys that holding pattern, that horrible emotional prison that we put ourselves in. Not to sound melodramatic, but it's pretty literal. I mean, it's figurative, but it's pretty accurate. But yeah, it surprised me, and it was on the nose. But what was kind of beautiful about it, from my perspective, is that I, having created it with a certain context in mind, I didn't realize what on the nose was for that song, how it would be read by the general public most obviously. And I didn't know, and you pointed it out to me and expounded on it, and just, I love it. It was a great surprise for me.
It was like we were playing this lyrical game of exquisite corpse.
Of cat and also cat.
Of what?
I was going to say cat and also cat, but exquisite corpse was much, much more exotic and probably accurate.
Oh. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I only vaguely know what that game is, Exquisite Corpse. I know that it was the name of a Soundgarden demo in the 90s on some bootleg. That's the whole reason I know the term. I kind of know it's some kind of a game or something. But what does it mean?
You write a portion of a story. You know, you write like about a paragraph, and then you write it on paper, and then you fold it over and you give it to the next person, and they only get to see the last sentence that you wrote.
And then
you continue writing the story, and you continue passing it around, and that's until you end up with a bunch of non sequiturs and weirdness.
That sounds like a fun night from the 80s.
It absolutely was. It's like the thing that like drama kids do on like when they're on going on trips to state or whatever.
Exactly. No, that's cute. Yeah.
But man, it's called Exquisite Corpse because the words themselves seem to be kind of a non sequitur between them. It seems to be kind of juxtaposed and not really have anything to do with one another.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. That is what we were doing. That's fantastic.
I want to ask Ty a question. So musically on this song, did Shale bring you like the skeleton of it, or was he working from a skeleton that you'd created? Because I know that the final version is much more dense and rich than the demos that we worked with to record. Like, it just turned into this a much, much bigger piece.
So usually the demos are just the chip tunes with vocals, and we work from there.
That you get from Shale?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, for that particular track, though, I did send more. I did send a beat, and I sent an additional MIDI bass line that was kind of written in the way like a real electric bass would be played. But they are usually just chiptunes and vocals. But yeah, but that time I did send a bit more. I don't think Ty used any of those things in this final recording.
I don't think so.
Yeah. It was a while ago.
So then, Ty, you're kind of doing that. The two of you are doing kind of a similar thing musically, because if Shale is sending you like a bare bones outline of a song that he has in mind, then you're harvesting bits of these melodies and turning them into something else too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
That's very accurate.
Cool, man.
Yeah. That is cool. All right, let's do the next track.
Oh, it's my personal... The next track, we worked on this record for 2 years, and I didn't know the full title until about 4 days ago. Because we've just been calling it Jesus, but the full title is My Personal Relationship with Our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, comma, who I probably made up.
Yeah, it's a bit snarky. Oh, gosh. I have – I like the song.
Uh-huh.
I feel just the tiniest bit trepidatious about it now.
Oh,
because I wrote it in a bit of a darker sort of emotional state than I'm in right now.
Uh-huh.
it's a bit venomous. It's kind of just expressing my anger with organized religion.
Oh, that comes across.
Yeah, very much so.
And I think it's a richer song for the unexpected counterpoint that you gave it. You know, you kind of turn the song into this debate between between a kind of like a American Jesus and maybe like a more historic Jesus.
Yeah, you know, I so
or a more benevolent you, one or something.
You
this
me,
is
you
weird. I am so uncomfortable talking about this now.
Good.
Oh gosh.
So you sent me the your parts, and you were singing this just really cynical kind of take on religion. As somebody who maybe had found faith and then felt like they had been swindled somehow and was just really kind of sarcastic and bitter about it.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of it as a person who was sincere and oblivious, and it was a straw man argument, but they kind of amount to the same thing.
I see. So when I was adding parts to it, I thought that if I just kind of followed the same thing, it would be just too much of this like assault against a religious faith.
It would have been one note and boring. You're completely correct.
Yeah. And also I've written a lot of material that kind of gives a cynical take to Bible
Night
stories.
Of Living Christ comes to mind.
Yeah. So I'd done that a few times, and I thought that like that was just going to be kind of too much, like, you know, spinning my wheels. So
that too. Yeah.
I instead gave it a challenge where I cast myself as Jesus in your song to provide counterpoint to your verses,
and very much redeemed the character in the narrative.
I did a bunch of research. I tried to make everything that I tried to make everything that my characterization of Jesus said actually come from the Bible, and so I had to do a little bit of work because I'm not so well versed.
That's wonderful. You did research.
I did,
and it paid off.
And then I think I think it does make it a little bit more of a volley than an assault.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It makes it a richer song in many ways. Tied to a Genesis remix too.
Yeah,
and that's really
great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so. So I was just let's like talk about the technical aspects of a song. That is another one that's real NES. But that one I used the is it the VRC7, the one with the FM synthesis? It's a Japanese only sound chip add on for NES cartridges that added actual FM synthesis to the two pulse waves and the triangle wave and the DPCM and the noise channel. So all that stuff is used. I used all the channels in there, and I'm pretty pleased with the composition. I got some interesting timing in that was hard to program in on the NES. And then Ty did this wonderful Genesis remix, which I feel like is the natural progression from the more primitive FM synth of the VRC7, or is it VRC?
Yeah, it's the seven.
That's the chip. Six is the Konami one. Yeah. Yeah, I guess they're both Konami ones, but 6 is the one that people know about more.
So when you say when it's listed as the Genesis remix, is it so all those sounds are from Sega Genesis system? Is that
yeah?
How'd you do that one, Ty? Is that fake bit or is that
No, that's real Genesis.
So you did it on Defil Mask?
Yeah.
Nice. That's really impressive. I didn't even know that. I thought it's so good. I thought it was fake bit. Those arpeggios and stuff sound so effortless and real in their timing. Wow. It's really good sample choice and well done. Good, great tracking. Well done.
Yeah. While we're teaming up to like sling fistfuls of praise at Ty, this is just a comment that I want to like kind of paste onto every track on the record. And I didn't realize this until we had some time to talk about it at Magfest this year when we were still in the middle of making the record. I could have gone my entire life and I never would have known that the drums on this record are programmed. Because the access to such incredible drum sounds that you have and your technique in programming them, they all just sound like real drums. Like they sound like in some places it feels like you've even programmed where it isn't, you know, metronome tight, which makes it sound like a real person playing it. I never would have known. And then when I heard, you know, later mixes of some of the stuff, like 10,000 Cigarettes ends with this little flourish on the snare drum. There's like a little drum roll and a rim shot I would have never, I feel like a very unsavvy music person,
It's worth noting that you are a drummer too.
I've been a drummer for like most of my life. I never ever would have known that any of that stuff was programmed. And if once I had been told that, I wouldn't have believed the person telling me. It's creepy how good your drum programming is.
Thank you.
Yeah, I try. In fact, you didn't believe. I was the person who told you, and you didn't believe.
Oh, right, because we were talking about. So I was asking you a question when we were working
Who recorded the drums? Who's your drummer
on the next next song on the record? I asked you. I was like, who played the drums? And did you because I was fishing at asking you. I was like, do you have a drum kit? This is, you know, this is a while ago. So you were upstate and we were talking about you coming down and like having some rehearsals to do like a live version of some of these songs. And I remember I heard the drums on the next song, To the Ground. I heard them and assumed that you had recorded them because they sound like a person playing drums in a room. And I didn't believe you. I think you told me this over email, and then I got to talk to Ty about it in person at MAGFest and probably like geeked out about it like I am right now. But I still kind of thought you guys were fucking with me. Like, you guys have worked together for a very long time, and here I'm the outsider. And I was like, this is some sort of hazing process. Make old Cokie believe that these are real, that these are fake drums.
Old Cokie, huh? Uncle Cokie. Will you tell us about the old times, the good times?
I can't remember a goddamn thing.
Oh, gosh. Let's do the next. Let's move on.
So those drums I'm talking about are on the next track, To the Ground.
Yeah.
I think this is the last one that we wrote lyrics for.
Yeah, I think it is the last. I think you finished it off. Yeah.
This song fucked up my life.
Why's that?
I'll tell you in a second. Why don't you tell me like what you were writing in those lyrics?
It's about wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. About wrestling. Yeah. Yeah. It's about wrestling. I mean, it's a kind of, I guess I started the song kind of, I wrote a creative kind of half essay, kind of half short story once about a kid at a Waffle House in Juggalo makeup who like gets into a fight in a parking lot. And then I kind of tried to revisit that in song form, and it just kind of turned into a song about wrestling. I was thinking at first it could be maybe an underground fighting ring or something, but it's probably wrestling.
You know, quick aside, it's funny that you mentioned Waffle House and wrestling. Because I actually met The Undertaker and Mankind and Triple H at a Waffle House.
That's of course.
Oh my god!
It's an institution. It's a staple of the wrestling diet.
I assume this was one visit to Waffle House, and they were all together, not just you.
Yeah, they were all there.
It wasn't like you went to Waffle House three times, and every time you stumbled upon a Hall of Famer.
That's like a tradition to eat at Waffle House after they do a big show.
Yeah,
that's good to know,
right? It's so cool. You were so close to them. That's amazing.
So, Shell, you had written this song.
Wait, let me tell my wrestling anecdote. Well, real quick.
Okay.
My brother, the brother between me and Devin. If some people know my little brother Devin, my youngest brother, but there's a brother between us, who's not known for like being much of a content creator, like me and Devin. Mm-hmm. But he was briefly in a Hawaiian band, and he's a guitarist, and he played Triple H's 40th birthday party.
Oh, yeah. What?
He was like the house band for that, just randomly, because he wanted a band that could do like a luau, because there was like a luau there.
Whoa.
Crazy. Right?
That's
my brother.
That's a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah. I'm sure it was.
So now now tell me, he's probably like not even a wrestling fan, right?
Not really. No.
Yeah.
Of course.
Like he saw Triple H in the parking lot and he's like, hey, I like your wrestling. You know?
That's how you make small talk with somebody, you know?
Yeah. Good wrestling.
You wrestle pretty good.
Yeah. Good job. But yeah, that's just weird. Anyway, it's cool, super cool. Okay, so you were saying.
So you sent me the skeleton of this song, and there were these lyrics that cued me that it was about wrestling, and but also had like this kind of sadness and cynicism that is characteristic of a lot of your work. And I took that and was like, okay, so he's kind of talking about this, the wrestler who's not famous, the jobber, the guy who's just out there to lose matches and to showcase other wrestlers.
Yeah.
And I have not, at this point we were writing this song, I had not watched wrestling since I was a kid. You know, in the 80s, I was a big fan. I saw the first Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, and the first, you know, three or four WrestleManias. I was a fan because it was the law. I was a boy in Iowa in the early 80s, and that's what you did. And I'd always enjoyed it, but I didn't stick with it. I missed out on the Attitude Era. I missed out on the NWO and the Stone Cold and The Rock. I didn't see any of that stuff. Like I had like gone away from it. But in recent years, I'd had conversations with like some burlesque friends of mine who at some point, somewhere we were hanging out, somebody mentioned something like said something disparaging about some kind of performance art and likened it to wrestling. And I got really defensive because I was like, you guys basically are wrestlers because wrestling is burlesque. It's rock and roll and fireworks and feather boas and romance and revenge and drama and guitar solo. It's just like every kind of American art, performance art just blended together into this big, colorful, sweaty mess.
And it has this complete lack of pretension that you don't find anywhere else in the professional art world. Yeah. There's nowhere else in the professional art world at all that has that lack of pretension, even like the punk rock world, which is supposed to pretend. Yeah. Lack of pretension is supposed to be punk rock's bread and butter. Punk rock has much more pretension than pro wrestling. Anyway,
it's really fun storytelling. It's fun entertainment. It's fun athleticism, and it's incredibly accessible. And these are defenses of wrestling that I had been making to people for on and off for years, even though I hadn't watched it in decades. So you send me the song and I'm like, great. I know what a jobber is. I'm going to write a song about a jobber. And I did a little research online cause I wanted to make sure I had all my shop talk up to date. Cause I wanted to drop some slang over there, use some phrases like putting somebody over, things like that. And I got kind of obsessed with it. And at the time I was telling my girlfriend about it, and she's a burlesque performer. And I was telling her the same thing. Why burlesque and wrestling have a lot in common. Why wrestling is the ultimate American entertainment. Again, something I hadn't seen in years, while I'm obsessively like just looking for all these little words. And she picked up on me doing this in this process and surprised me by getting me tickets to a house show at Madison Square Garden during their holiday tour last December. And I was I felt like a little weird at the time. I was like, I guess this will be fun. This is going to be like kind of nostalgic for me. This is going to remind me, my mom, when I was a kid, my mom used to drive me to Omaha, Nebraska and Des Moines, Iowa to take me to WWF shows. And this will be fun. And you can see, this thing that I've been singing the praises of all this time. So we go to this house show and guess what? That was fucking it. Because like the next week I was watching Raw and SmackDown and have every week since then. And I've watched every pay-per-view. Most of the times when my mind is idle, I'm thinking about wrestling. So you send me this song.
Yeah.
I tried to write lyrics for it. My girlfriend got me tickets to a wrestling event and together it all threw me ass first into wrestling fandom in a way that has taken over my life. So
that's so fucking cool. That's awesome.
And now looking back, it bothers me that there's a line in my rap verse where I say no interviews. And now if I'd had waited a few months, I would have said no promos is what I meant to say. They don't interviews is not a wrestling term. Promo is a wrestling term. But yeah, so this song basically reintroduced me to wrestling, and now I'm obsessed. So good job, so fucker.
I have to get back into it because I've been like my life has been topsy turvy. I haven't had stable place I've been. I got to get back into wrestling now.
In January, they're doing a show at Barclays, which is the 25th anniversary of Raw. You know, Raw is the longest running weekly television show in history. Mm-hmm. And it started in Brooklyn. So they're doing, New York, but they're doing this big 25th anniversary show for Monday Night Raw at Barclays. And I just scored the sickest seats for it.
That's awesome.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be on camera.
That's fantastic.
Look, that'll be in the supplemental materials for this record. We'll maybe we'll, you know, in a few months, we'll add some bonuses. It's just like a video clip of me looking like an asshole while Braun Strowman destroys somebody. While we are still talking about this song, I think that To the Ground is my favorite song on the record.
It's a good one. I'm trying to think about, like, it's my favorite thing. It's a good one. I think it's a good one.
Actually, I don't know if I want to absolutely sign that.
They're all good ones.
Now I'm starting to think about them a little bit more. And yeah. Now I'm going with To the Ground as my favorite song on the record.
Okay.
Those freaking drums, man. They're not a robot.
They're really uncannily good.
I try.
Did you know that the Epic Podcast is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network? And did you know that the Nerdy Show Podcast Network is home to dozens of other programs that are also surely relevant to your nerdy interests? Oh, it's true. It's damn true. Swing by nerdyshow.com and see what treasures await you. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. At patreon.com/nerdyshow, you can fund the entire Nerdy Show Network and unlock a plethora of amazing bonus content and early releases. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
All right, what's the next song?
The next song is The Other Devil.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
An old Schaefer classic that I pitched you. I'd always wanted to, like, do some kind of duet with you. I used to, like, you know, I'd sing along to it, and I'd imagine that we would be doing it, like, on stage. This big fancy fantasy that I had.
Yeah.
I was like, this would be so cool. It's like, actually have two performers do cutting each other off. It would be so cool live, and it would be difficult live. But...
So it's not
it's
a song.
Cool proof
it's
of
it's
concept a, to do it with two performers on a record. So I pitched you that idea, and you gave it the go ahead.
And, yeah, I was surprised.
I love how it turned out. I wrote a whole instrumental, and like Ty, you pretty much chucked it out. But that's cool because what you did is better. And do we have to remix this one? No, we don't remix this one.
No,
just the one version.
So this song, The Other Devil, was I originally released it on a record 8 years ago, and it's just it was just like a filler song for this record that was doing a back and forth of two voices that were both me goofing on the old Popeye trope of, you know, him having an angel on one shoulder and a devil on one shoulder, sort of, you know, arguing for his moral decisions. And I wrote the song where I just made them both devils, and one devil tells you to do something bad and the other devil tells you to do something even worse. And that was it. That was it. Very low concept, very simple.
No,
and
then the best concept.
And then I just beat it to death with Popeye references and for way too many bars. I haven't really been able to do much with it over the years. Like, I couldn't really do it live because the vocal tracks overlap. I was doing it for a while in New York. I did a couple of shows where my friend Nelson Lugo, who's a magician and also a puppeteer, had a puppet commissioned that looks like me if I were a Muppet, and then he would come on stage and I made an instrumental that left half the vocals on it and his puppet would lip sync to him, and then we'd do some performances of it that way. That was the only way I got to do it. A couple years after that, my friend Cool Z and I were on tour, and we've done dozens of collabs over the years, and to kind of beef up our set of collabs for a South by Southwest performance, he learned it. So then we got to perform it live on stage. That was the first time I did it with a person on stage. And then it was around the time that I was learning it with him was when you sent me this message saying, hey, maybe we should like update your song, The Other Devil, so that we could both do it. And it just felt weird that all of a sudden this song, this 8-year-old song, it was getting all this kind of movement all these years later. Yeah. And the version that we have made for this record, I like so much more than the version I released on album 8 years ago.
Thank you.
I love having two voices going back and forth. I love the way you kind of arranged how we were going to split up the vocal parts. And I love the decisions that you made in that. And I just freaking love this dirty, gnarly, like industrial sounding instrumental behind it.
Yeah.
That builds up when it gets to that third verse, and it gets really head knotty because it gets like, there's riffs. Oh, I just love it. So I love it so much more than the version I made.
Yeah.
You guys made my song a better song.
Thank you so much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to like reimagine your song. It's like, I got to do like a filmic reboot of your movie. Like, that's kind of how I imagine. That's how I was thinking about it. I was like, I love the story you're telling in this song, but I wish I could embellish it. I wish I could make it so that the devils are competing, but there's this game on top of it where they're just both working against the person they're talking to in a sort of collaborative. They're collaborating while they're competing at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think the slight lyrical tweaks you made emphasize that and kind of make the narrative a bit richer, you know?
Yeah.
Because they do some kind of chummy wink, wink, nudge, nudge stuff to show where they work together. Yeah. Where they work together for a moment and they go back to pretending to really be enemies.
So it's basically like if my song were Vice Principals.
Yes.
Serious.
I haven't seen that.
it's excellent. Do you like it, Ty?
Yes, it's great.
I feel like I get it just based on the name.
I love that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to sit here and explain to you.
No, don't. All right, cool. Let's move on.
The next song is like it was a song premise that I pitched to you. Mm-hmm. A couple of times over like 10 years. It's Radio Kill Switch.
Yes, I remember. You know, you have it. She's like, you have a couple of times.
And I feel like I pitched that to like Nerdapalooza 2009, and but it was like, I think it was when we, this faded karaoke night between our birthdays 2 years ago.
Yeah,
when we started talking about the project, we started talking about this song concept again, and I think this is the thing that kind of got it really moving.
That launched the record. Yeah. That originally, I mean, it is kind of all connected to or coming from that concept, even if it's not like a completely clear linear narrative.
Yeah. That song's been in the works for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was always like a really, really early
demo version that was Radio Unstis.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a whole different aspect of a song. I mean, it's kind of the merging of two things for me. Because when Schaefer had pitched me this in the past, in theory, I'd always wanted to do it, but I never really knew how to approach it. How, like, would I begin a chorus telling a really more concrete linear story than I usually do when I do these kind of collaborations? And I just, like, I kind of wasn't sure how I could start it and satisfy your vision, because it was yours and I didn't know where to begin with that. But what we did was I just sent you something that was in my mind unrelated, and then you applied this idea to it, which is the best. But
it's great. It changed from like the original concept. I think the original concept that I pitched to you was, the story is it's two fishermen who are like a little fishing boat, and they get blown out to sea, and they have no supplies, and they're stuck out there, and while they're out there waiting to be rescued or die, they have a radio, and like all they can pick up is like a faint hip hop station, and it has they hear like a beat coming through, this like crackly hip hop beat, and they take turns freestyling over it to pass the time. And that's the whole song. And it was supposed to be like, I think the original idea was, it was going to be like more seafaring, and they were going to sound like pirates, and it was going to be like, yeah, they were going to use, I don't know, a bunch of seafaring talk. Yeah. I can't even do it because I have no idea what being a boat person is like.
Real maritime stuff.
But when you and I talked about it, and then you sent me this, like the beginning of this kind of techno beat with this, chorus and a verse that you'd written for it, it changed the story of the song. Yeah. And then instead became like two guys who are either brothers or friends or lovers, it's never really clear, yeah, are on a cruise ship that sinks in a terrible storm, and they're the only two that survive, and they're on a raft, and same thing happens. They have no supplies, but they have like a transistor radio, and every now and then for a couple hours a day, it picks up a faint radio station that's playing dance music.
Yeah, it becomes a great like launching point for the narrative. It really is a nice framework. This whole, that's why I feel like the whole album has kind of a cinematic feel to me, because you've taken a lot of the time, like the chorus that I take, that I provided you, and you just made it like a launching point, something kind of incidental to a larger story that also, but frames it.
I think like in this version they're not performing their music, they're not like two guys are like two pirates freestyling over the music that they're hearing. It's just that this kind of upbeat dance number is like this insidious thing that's all that they can hear to distract them from it.
Yeah.
That which just sounds like torture, that if like all you could do, your only connection to the outside world is you're hearing this like midnight megamix.
exactly.
And you just sit there and listen to it and pretend like that it's fine while you think about all of the things that you fucked up and how you're gonna die.
These are such brutal, beautiful short stories.
This is the one with the most clear, again, like you said it, but it's the one with the most concrete three-act narrative.
And that's all you, but it's really well done. I love what you did. Those lyrics.
It was freaking hard as shit to write. It's so long.
I'm so happy with it. I mean, it is impressive. Like, it, you can see the labor that you put in.
Yeah, I've got pages and pages of earlier drafts where it.
I saw a bunch of them.
I don't know. I can't remember. Like, I normally will like start writing a song, and if I'm not liking how it's going, I'll keep parts of it and kind of massage it, what I've got, into whatever new direction it takes. And this one, I absolutely threw out 16 bars at a time on more than one occasion and just had to start completely over.
Sometimes that's the more efficient way, you know?
Yeah.
Other times it's not. It depends how close you came in your first try. But
not even close.
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah. So sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll tweak something for a couple of days and then wish that I'd thrown it away sooner when I ultimately do throw it away and start over.
I love the way it came out. And I think I like, and there's also, so there's Radio Kill Switches on there, and there's also a remix of it, the Unstis remix.
Yes. Oh, which yes. Go on.
And Ty, you built that instrumental from scratch?
Yeah.
No offense, Shell, but I like the remix version.
I do too. I like both versions very much, but
I do. I like them both. I'm not disparaging the.
No, Ty. I love what Ty did with it.
Yeah, a lot, because there's a rising intensity in the music. There's like a subtle change in something that is like on the surface appears to be just kind of this consistent dancey throb throughout the whole thing. There are subtle changes in each, as the song progresses from each chorus to each verse, that add like intensity and sort of desperation to it that I love.
Yeah. Yeah. The mood of it is much more dynamic than my original version. And the tone, the musical tone of every verse matches the lyrical tone, as the lyrical tone changes from hopeful to despairing over the course of a song. So that's, Work. Good job, guys. All of us.
Yay! We did it.
Right. Yeah, I'm really happy. I hope it's well received. I think people will dig it. I like that this podcast is now like a companion piece to the record. That's pretty cool. Maybe we should make it a bonus track.
But, is that a bad idea?
Yeah, something like that.
Or at this least. Is very different than the interview or the podcast that we recorded and was lost.
This is, and this is better. I'm glad we're doing this one.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's
I'm a lot less drunk this time.
That's actually very helpful.
I am too. I was a little drunk the other night.
I'm a bit less drunk. No. I'm just as drunk. Anyway, so Ty brought up that this has been in the works for a long time in more than one way. I think, not even older, but almost as old, is the musical origin of this piece. I wrote that melody that I sing over a completely different piece of music that I wrote with Amy Shee. Amy Shee, who's a video game fan arrangement community artist. You know, she's done Overclocked Remix stuff and The Sauce. And we were doing The Sauce compo. That was a team compo called The Doubles Dash, which I briefly officiated. And I was teamed with her, and she wrote the instrumental. And I should explain the compo. It's a contest where a bunch of musicians get together in IRC chat, mm-hmm. and everyone gets a theme. And then from the moment you get a theme, everyone has an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever to write a song. And then everybody listens in a listening party afterwards. And there's like a week where everyone votes, and then the who won. The next week when you have another compo, and this was a teams of two mm-hmm. compo. There was a vocal compo too. So she did the music, I did the lyrics and the melody, and I wrote that melody over some dance music that she wrote, which was not what I used when I redid the piece as Radio Kill Switch, because it was originally Radio Unstis, and the lyrics were a bit different, but not much. There was only like the two verses, and I think one verse was pretty much the same, the first verse with the, mm-hmm. the number station. And then there was another verse that was not in the Radio Kill Switch version at all, which was just kind of more of the same about like a dance station. So it was repurposed.
Am I correct in thinking that Unstis is supposed to be read like Unts?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
It's something that we used to say in the IRC chat when we were doing the compos. We would joke about doing some Unstis tonight, bro. Some Unstis.
old inside jokes.
Yeah. It's like all the best Unstis.
It was going to be a title track. This was the,
it was.
I feel
it
like
was.
When first,
it was going to be Radio Kill Switch.
Once we started, we took this album idea beyond Drunken Karaoke and then started having an actual conversation with Ty about it. I feel like for a minute there, the working title of the record was Radio Kill Switch.
It was for quite a while. It tested very poorly. when I made initial announcements about doing this record, people were very excited that we were doing a record together and very wary once they heard the title. Very negative reception to the title. People thought it evoked like 90s like skate rock, like I can't think of the name of the band. God damn it. Oh Jesus, how can I not think of Fred Durst's band?
Limp Bizkit?
That's the one. Not to knock Limp Bizkit if you're a Limp Bizkit fan, but generally regarded as a unpopular band, an unpopular style. And people told me it evoked in their mind music that would sound like that. So,
I see.
Change
like that would
the title. Yeah,
they would be. Yeah, all right, I got it. They would be like that. Would be a band that would be on the music festival that Limp Bizkit would headline.
Yes, exactly.
Like it'd be like one of the openers.
Radio Kill Switch would be one of the openers for Limp Bizkit. So
Radio Kill Switch. That's that band that guy Nate used to work with, you know, plays bass in.
You know, Radio Kill Switch sounds like Radio Kill Switch sounds like a really shitty Rage cover band. You know, so it's gonna get out there.
I never got it. I wouldn't have had that same if I'd been part of your polling pool for that title. It didn't invoke any of that stuff for me. I didn't feel or evoke. I didn't feel that about the title.
I didn't either. When we were talking about it just as a group, but then when I brought it to the outside.
Well, I still think it's an excellent title, and I think it's a good song, and I think Hold Person is a better album title.
Yeah, I think it's a great song title, and I think it's a great song, but I think Hold Person, I agree, is a better album title. And I wanted to call it Hold Person. I was wanting to, just because I wanted to do an album called Hold Person, and the whole reason I wanted to do that was because I liked a piece of art that Ricky Henry had done, which was just kind of like two people hugging, and one was silhouetted and the other wasn't. And I just liked that piece of art, and I thought of the D&D spell Hold Person as applying to it via like a double entendre, you know, like holding a person, hugging, but also Hold Person is the Dungeons and Dragons spell that causes paralysis. Yes, divine spell, second level.
It also sounds like a command.
Yeah,
it also sounds like a command that a very icy operator would give to somebody on the phone.
Yes. Hold person.
Yes,
it does. It works. It works a lot of ways. And I think for our album, it kind of talks about a sort of a frigid paralysis and a terrified fear of death and an imprisonment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great, it's just a nice, very versatile piece of language. And I like how it applies here.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. And, did not end up using that artwork. Artwork didn't work with what we were doing. I ran it by you and you very eloquently and convincingly explained why it didn't work. And,
well, I didn't realize that was existing artwork. I thought that was something that had been crafted for this. I just now learned that.
Well, it's actually
that was
kind of both, because Ricky is kind of I hesitate to call him a perfectionist, but he likes to update his art when you ask if you can use it. He'd prefer to kind of update it and tailor it to your project, which is great. So he redrew that in a way that he thought would apply. So it is the old piece but redone.
I just thought it took away some of the mystery of the title, because
I agree.
As we were just saying, there's so many things you can infer from the phrase Hold Person, and I thought that the illustration narrowed it down too much.
Yeah.
However, the adjusted version that he made, I think is gorgeous. I think the album cover that he made is great.
It's really nice. It's really nice.
Also, shout out to Ricky.
Yeah, thank you, Rick.
Yeah.
They really, you're the best. We love you. Thank you for doing all of our art for so long.
Ricky's basically a member of the Double Eyes Backfire,
He's basically
right?
a member of the Grammar Club. He's like the secret member of Double Eyes Backfire and Grammar Club. And he was literally like a founding member of Double Eyes Backfire, too. He didn't really stick around for too long.
I still remember, you know, Nerdapalooza 2009 when you'd release like about half of the songs that would end up on Ultimate Songs from the Pit. You might have even had just cassette release or something.
That's what it was.
Songs from the Pit.
That's exactly what it was. And, yes.
And you, the three of you performed. Ricky played drums, Ty played guitar, Shale sang. Mm-hmm. And there were some stuff that was like on a backing track too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There were the NES tracks.
I remember that. And I already loved those songs so much. And I knew you, Shale, but I think I met Ricky and Ty like that year. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. But that performance was just everything that I wanted, because I had already grown so fond of those songs. And I remember this great moment where there was a problem with the headphones. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And Ricky Henry. So like, he wasn't getting the signal through his headphones. And if he's playing drums, it's hard. You know, you can't, if you don't match up, it's going to create a cacophony. And just like a boss. He just like, I remember him just like standing up and just like this determined look on his face, and was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Like,
to saying it to like God, like to the whole room and to you guys, but just universally just saying it out like at this declaration, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And he just started clapping.
It was a real Spartacus moment.
It really was. He started clapping and you guys Ty started playing and you started singing and the room clapped along with you and it was magical. It was just a wonderful moment.
The majesty, the personal magnitude of Ricky Henry.
he just is like basically swept in and said, listen up, fuckers. Yeah. This is plan B. And
it was awesome. It was nothing short of awesome in the old sense of the word.
And the next year I saw you guys perform again at Nerdapalooza, and that was the year you all had Mortal Kombat costumes. Which was also awesome.
That was fun. Yeah. Thank you so much for saying those kind things. All right, shall we move on to the next song?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the next song is a cover. It's Surrender by Cheap Trick.
Mm-hmm. And we did that because we sang that at karaoke the night before.
Yeah. Surrender has been one of my, I love karaoke, mm-hmm. and Surrender has been one of my top five karaoke jams for a decade.
Yeah, you do it well. And the whole reason I requested that we do it because I had heard you do it so many times before. And it always got me really pumped because you kill it.
I mean, you can just kind of like track the genesis of this record to that night in the karaoke bar where we're celebrating our birthdays and then we get really drunk and naturally we should make a record together. Yeah. We should. Remember that song about the fishermen who like rap over a radio? We should do that song. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm up next. Mother told me blah, 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 blah. Do the song. We should cover Surrender too.
That's exactly how it happened.
So there's a cover. I think I've like probably in the back of my head wanted to do some kind of cover or updated version of Surrender for years and just never really had the means to execute it. And it required your fire under me to make this a reality.
Thank you. Thank you, Dev. And I just wanted to have a recording of you doing Surrender, so it's a win-win. Oh, yeah, I'm really happy with that track. I think people will dig it. So,
I do worry about some of the younger kids that might not know that it's a cover.
Yeah.
And when it gets to the part in the end chorus and we start doing the we're all right and start thinking that we're referencing the theme song from that 70s show, which itself was referencing.
Yes.
Was referencing Cheap Trick's Surrender. I shouldn't say I'm worried. I just note that.
That's it. It could happen.
I'm not worried.
It could happen. It probably will happen.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But it came out great. I'm really happy with that cover.
Yeah, me too. Is that it?
That's it. Well, so there are six. Well, we already talked about the other two songs because the other two songs are remixes, but it's six songs and two remixes, the remix of Jesus and the remix of Radio Kill Switch. Total of eight songs.
Yes. And I always thought maybe someday we do like a remix album. We can call it Hold Monster, which is the higher level variant of the Hold Person spell. It can affect all creatures, not just humanoids, but you know.
Well, I kind of feel like this. Maybe I'm crazy in thinking this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this record, this Hold Person, has been somewhat instrumental in this reawakening of the grammar club.
Definitely, yes, absolutely.
You've just gone in, there's a Patreon, and there's the podcast, and there's all of this content that is bringing the grammar club back to life in a big way. And I feel that when you told me the title Hold Person, the idea was that later down the road there would be a record called Hold Monster that would be remixes of the songs from Hold Person, but with Beefy doing rap verses instead of mine.
Yeah, that was the idea. We could still,
so basically the grammar club.
Basically the grammar club. I mean, we could still do that. In fact, I want to do a version of the other devil where I'm not in it. You're still in it, but it's Beefy doing my lines, but they're rewritten completely. There's totally different responses. Oh. Wouldn't that be a dope track?
I'll just keep being involved in new versions of the same song.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to do anything except sit back and approve.
Isn't that really the dream? Isn't that what we're just kind of always striving for? I don't want to make decisions anymore. I just want to be in a position with a big golden pen.
I'm so happy to put you in that position because you're such a swell guy.
Thank you.
Been a good friend for a long time.
But I'm whatever ends up, if Hold Monster happens or not, if this record played any part in bringing the Grammar Club back together, then I'm even more thrilled about this record because I've always been a fan of the Grammar Club.
Thank you. It did. It absolutely did. I mean, since me and Ty had just been kind of working together on and off on this, so we just decided to work together in perpetuity since we were already doing that.
Yeah. And it's great, Shale. Yes. I'm on like a personal note, and maybe
thank you.
Maybe this
it's great
maybe
for
this
us
is
too. So thank you. Thank you for you. We owe you a get of datitude. As we say in the program.
I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sorry. That was a stupid intro.
Well, this is another thing about about the Hold Person record is that I remember, and you take this out, it's too personal, but I remember that, like, I've just always been a big fan of what you do, and you hadn't released music for a very long time. You hadn't put stuff online. You had you'd been creating stuff and you were still like a presence on social media, but it seems like you were pretty depressed.
Yeah.
And not really creating anything. And so like almost kind of for selfish reasons, I wanted you to start like get involved in a project where there were other people involved to kind of keep you honest and keep you kind of moving in hopes that you would get inspired and maybe you would find some kind of solace in creating music again. You'd find some inspiration and motivation again. And it seems like that kind of happened because like these songs, it may have taken us 2 years to make the record, but the bulk of a lot of the writing and kind of the early work that we did before we were getting into post-production all happened kind of quickly. Like,
yeah, it did.
The songs were kind of coming at me like one after another. And it was great. Cause it was like, oh my God, Shale has risen and he is working and he's like driven. and then it just turned into a monster. Like this whole record got made. And now you're like, I'm bringing back the Grammar Club. I am somehow like you shared your calendar with me. So now I've got on my calendar, like every day there's some Grammar Club thing related that pops up on my daily calendar.
Yeah, we just that with you.
I wanted to see you working again.
Thank you for doing that. I was looking for a project to get myself out of the mental holding pattern I was in. Like, I mean, you said we wouldn't recover any of the old material when the Lost Podcast, but we were both just kind of coming into an upswing at the time we started this record, and we needed something, I think, to work on with other people. I definitely did, and I was looking for that in doing this. And thank you for giving it to me. And during that time when I wasn't doing anything, I didn't give you anything.
You gave
me
an
opportunity to get better, to help myself.
No, you made this happen. I just poked you in the ribs a bunch.
No, all right, sure.
Two pirates. They're in a fishing boat. And they're lost at sea.
All right, and you were like, full credit on me. This is just right. My thing.
But then it backfired on me because I halfway through the making of this record, I like sunk back into an incredibly deep, dark place. And then I was like seeing you, I'm like, oh, look, well, Shale's getting his shit together. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm fine now.
It's ups and downs.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an emotional record though. You know, we put ourselves into this. It's a bit more personal than
this is true.
It feels. Yeah.
There's nothing more emotional and passionate though than that wailing guitar solo in 10,000 Cigarettes.
He brought it back home. Thank you. think that's the podcast. Thank you. Thank you for coming. And thank you again for doing this twice. I think we did a good show.
My pleasure.
Check out Schaefer's Bandcamp, which is what's the address there?
I think it's just SchaeferTheDarkLord.bandcamp.com.
Yeah.
And that is where Schaefer Riley and the Double Eyes Backfires Hold Person will also be available.
Yes. Very exciting. I'm very excited about that. And mm-hmm. So thank you for listening.
Once again, we would like to thank Shale Riley, Ty Gwenly, and myself of a couple weeks ago for recording that segment.
Aw, past you loves future you so much.
Please get our record.
Yeah.
I know we just plugged it, but at SchaeferTheDarkLord.bandcamp.
Go get it, folks. Get you a hot slice of Schaefer. That was gross.
That was really gross.
I'm sorry. I think that's it. Do you have anything to plug?
Not properly.
Oh, okay. That's what a weird way to start that sentence.
I don't have any gigs this month. However, I think it is worth noting that on Tuesday, December 26th, I will be at Madison Square Garden.
No, you're not.
Oh, yes, I am.
No, I mean, yes, you will physically be there, yes.
To see the WWE Live Holiday Tour.
Oh, jeez.
It's a house show, but it's at MSG, and it's on a Tuesday night, which means the entire SmackDown roster is going to be somewhere else, North Carolina, doing a show, which means it's just Raw. It's just talent from Raw, and that's where all my favorite wrestlers are.
Did you literally just take this opportunity to brag?
Oh, no, I haven't bragged yet.
Oh, okay, here it comes.
I have sick ass fucking floor seats.
Yes, you do.
Oh my God, I have good seats.
It's kind of insane the amount of money you spent on them, but you know what? Go for it.
I am going to be able to smell Finn Balor.
Well, that's it.
That's all I got to plug. And then, like, it's Santa's birthday the day before. That's it. That's all I got.
That's not really a plug, but I guess because it'll happen before the next week.
We've got one listener that's going to go, righteous.
Yeah.
That's it. We got one.
Yeah. One listener's going to go, rock on. Yeah. Good for you.
Roman Reigns and John Cena in the main event.
Here we go.
The Bar, Sheamus and Cesaro versus Dean Ambrose, who I hate, and Seth Rollins in a steel cage tag match.
Is this Schaefer's wrestling
Braun
corner?
Braun Strowman versus Kane. I like Braun Strowman.
None of them are Jinder Mahal, so as far as I'm concerned.
He is a SmackDown star.
I literally don't care.
He will be working in North Carolina. Or whatever.
If he's not there, I don't care.
Okay.
That's really what I'm coming down to. But I've got a couple of things to plug. This will come out the same day you're listening to this. It is Queens for Puerto Rico. It is a Puerto Rico fundraiser at Vintage, which is on Ditmars Boulevard in Astoria, Queens. You can go to Facebook to find information on that. I am also going to be at the second annual Repeal Day Party on Tuesday, December 5th at the Hotel Chantel. It is a huge, huge Vintage Day celebration marking the historical event of the repeal of the Prohibition Act, and booze became legal to drink again. And it's also an opportunity if you like to dress up in vintage or fancy duds. This is an opportunity to do it. Your old pal Lugatron 5000 is going to be there.
What?
Spitting the hot wax from the 20s, the 1920s. As if, I don't know, there's no 2020, so I don't really know if that joke plays, yeah. And on Thursday, December 7th, I'm going to be at the Green Fairy at the Red Room. And this is the monthly absinthe tasting event that I keep telling people about. So if you want some delicious, delicious absinthe, or dress up in fancy clothes, or just hang out in a cool speakeasy bar, then come on down.
On Friday, December 15th, I'm going to see Star Wars The Last Jedi
with
Nelson Lugo,
yes,
Bunny Buxom,
yes,
and MC Frontalot.
Yes!
Just like when we saw Rogue One
and
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens.
So maybe we can do a field report.
Oh, God, are we going to still do... I guess we could do those.
Yeah, who cares? Nothing matters.
Nothing matters. Oh, that's my best friend, the nihilist. I love him. I guess that's it. Mm-hmm. All right, loyal listener, this has been episode 56. Sweet jeebus, it's been a ride. I have been your host, Nelson Lugo.
I have been your other host, Shape of the Dark Lord.
Be safe, internets.
Goodbye, you.
Thank you for listening to the Epic Podcast. We'd love to listen to you, too. So send us your feedback, questions, love mail, hate mail, recipes, and fan fiction to epicpiecast@gmail.com. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network. And there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review us on iTunes. Like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
No, seriously, can suck a dick. Not that that's like, you know, a bad thing, because mm-hmm. getting and giving dick sucking. You know what? No, take this back. Can suck the shit out of my asshole. No, I guess some people like that stuff too. Fuck. Is a horrible human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.